Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Ella Jean Ehrlich.
I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
I'm Rosie.
This is Martina Navratilova.
This is Mark Forbes.
I'm Andy Murray.
You're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Episode 491 of the Tennis Podcast. This is, I'm David Law. Catherine Whittaker is with me. We are on the eve of our flights to the Australian Open. Can't believe it, especially given it's grey and dreary and horrible outside. Catherine, how are you doing?
Seven out of ten.
I'll be crikey. Well, what's going on with the voice? Catherine's got the... Have you got the lurgy? Or is that your
voice? We've got the lurgy, yeah. This week's Tennis Podcast brought to you by David Law and Tom Waits. it's nothing, hopefully, that some Australian sunshine can't cure.
Excellent.
But I am going to be that person on the plane that I usually hate, being disgusting in a confined space.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm not sitting next to you. Crikey. Thankfully, we're 2 days apart in our travel plans, and so I should be able to avoid it. We should say we have got so much to get through today. We've got the Hopman Cup, we've got Brisbane, Doha, Pune, Auckland, Shenzhen, all of these fantastic tournaments we've had over the last week. We've got Roger Federer to talk about. He beat Alexander Zverev in the final of the Hopman Cup in the men's singles. Angelique Kerber looking good. Serena Williams back. There was Serena and Federer on court at the same time in the mixed doubles. We got more on Andy Murray. We've got loads of winners like Roberto Bautista, Kevin Anderson, Rina Sabalenka. There's so much to talk about today. And we should also update you on our Kickstarter progress as we try to keep the Tennis Podcast going and growing in 2019 and to give Grad Matt a job. We have booked his flight. So he is going to Australia, to Melbourne for the first time in his whole life, and he's going to be there helping us produce the show. He'll be appearing on the show with us as well. We are, Catherine, 84% funded. So we are just 16% short of our target right now, which is amazing, isn't it? We've got 1 week to go. So go to kickstarter.com, to our Twitter page at Tennis Podcast, or our Tennis Podcast website, which is tennispodcast.net. You'll be able to see a link there where you can go and chip in to our Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign. Basically, we're just trying to put a budget together that enables us to produce as many of these shows as we possibly can, as well as we can, and just keep this thing going, because we are in our seventh year. And next week, Catherine, or just during the Australian Open, we will be producing episode 500. Can you remember episode one?
Oh, I don't like to talk about episode one.
Oh. Right. Shouldn't have brought that up, folks.
Episode 500 will be better than episode one.
Okay.
That is a CW guarantee.
Excellent. But, I mean, really, it has been so heartwarming to see the sheer number of people that have been getting behind us in recent weeks. We had 571 people back us throughout the whole campaign last year. 650 now, Catherine, have supported us, and to know that this show means enough to that many people to be able to help it along and to continue and thrive is just wonderful, and we are blown away. We are really moved by it, and if there are more of you that want to do the same, we've got to hit the target, because we won't get a penny if we don't. Kickstarter is all or nothing, and as we say, we want to give Grad Matt the job that he deserves. But for now, Catherine, Hopman Cup. First of all, this is supposed to be, or we expect it to be, the last ever Hopman Cup, don't we? Because the ATP Cup that is being brought in next year, played across, I think, three cities, one of which looks like being Sydney, because they've just announced a roof is going to be built for next year. The Hotman Cup, men and women, mixed doubles and all that, country against country, looks as though it's on its last legs and that we've just seen the last of it. And it finishes with Switzerland defending their title, Roger Federer going unbeaten, beating Alexander Zverev. We'll talk about the actual little player storylines in a moment. But first of all, that is a shame, isn't it, if 30 years of the Hotman Cup is at an end.
Yeah, I find it inexplicable. I think it's a great event. I really do. I'd love it if it counted for something. I know it would change a bit if it counted for something. I know a lot of the things that are nice about it are by virtue of it being an exhibition event. But nonetheless, I think it's fantastic. And I find it strange that it's potentially disappearing by choice. You know, it's Tennis Australia. It's a Tennis Australia-owned event, and it's Tennis Australia that are part of the creation of the ATP Cup, which would see the Hotman Cup disappear. I find the whole thing really weird. And if plans do proceed as things stand at the moment, the Hotman Cup will be gone. I mean, you know how I feel about the ATP Cup. First of all, I mean, there's so much baby going out with bathwater. Even if you generally support the idea of an ATP Cup, right? Even if you're like, okay, cool, ATP Cup, I can get on board with that. Why does it have to be at the expense of the Hotman Cup and Brisbane? And, you know, these are babies going out with bathwater. These are really good events, I think. They are. They pulled out all the stops, possibly because, you know, it's supposedly the last year and they got the Federer Serena on the same court together, never happened before thing, then playing mixed doubles. But look at the stir that created. Everybody was going nuts for that. I mean, some of
globally,
the mixed doubles matches this week, I mean, people have really paid attention to and enjoyed the Hotman Cup. And I think because of its position in the calendar before the Australian Open, it does take on a bit of significance that an ordinary exhibition wouldn't, because the form of Roger Federer in that event is relevant, because those are the only warm-up matches he will be playing before the Australian Open. So it's more than just to shrug the shoulders and just sort of say, oh, well, how he's playing is of no consequence at all. You know, and Zverev and all the rest of them. I think a few more of the female participants will be playing Sydney next week. But anyway, I sigh at the whole thing. A utilitarian would not approve of what's happening. I don't think the utility in tennis is being improved by the plans that are currently in place, put it that way.
Mm. Yeah. Well, we'll see how it evolves. But I think
What is your opinion?
Well, I agree with you. I don't want the Hotman Cup to disappear. You mentioned Federer Serena playing mixed doubles this week, and it was just a wonderful moment, really. The final was great. I don't like this fast four mixed doubles format personally.
That's
just a personal view, and there's a lot of people that we polled on Twitter at Tennis Podcast that have agreed. The majority, I think, don't like that. But
good.
And that should be the rule passed, as far as I'm concerned.
Big relief.
Yes, but the gist of the Hotman Cup, I don't see what there's not to like. And the fact is, we don't have another one of those. We don't have anything else like that. So this is what gets me, is that so many of the changes that are made to the sport end up with more of the same, it seems to me. And actually, what we need is some point of difference. And this particular competition provides some of that, which I really enjoyed. In terms of the event itself, and impressions of the players that we saw, you've noted down here four names: Federer, Zverev, Serena, and Kerber in particular. Let's just start with that Federer Zverev final, because that felt like, and again, it's to all intents and purposes an exhibition. But that final that those two played, 6-4, 6-2 to Roger Federer, was a return to where we might have been a year ago in terms of Roger Federer looking fleet-footed, sharp, using his talent, and Alexander Zverev having really no answer to it, which is totally the opposite of what we found at the ATP finals, where Zverev just imposed his game and made Federer look a little impotent out there. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, and make no mistake, they were both trying full throttle. You know, I know you can't recreate the a Grand Slam or you know, big ATP final situation. I know somewhere at the back of their minds, some aspect of it being an exhibition will have had a factor. But in terms of their conscious minds, they were giving it everything because matchups matter. You know, if they end up playing one another in the Australian Open semi-final, that will have been the last time they played. That match will feature it on both their minds. So it mattered. And Roger Federer, I thought, throughout the week, was better than last year, better than he was in Australia last year. I mean, the Hopman Cup last year, he lost to Kokkinakis, if you remember. And look, he looked good. And everybody, I think, was talking about him as the Australian Open favourite this time last year. But there were fewer other contenders. You know, Djokovic wasn't... I mean, he was barely on the scene this time last year, was he? In the end, he... got to, was it quarterfinally lost to Chung? Yeah. Mm. I think that match will feel damn good for Federer and pretty sour for Sasha Zverev, actually. I don't think he'd admit to how sour it feels, but I don't think that will have tasted nice for him. What do you think?
It is the perfect tournament, though, isn't it, for Federer, because he can just let it all flow. There's no real stress moments in those matches, and I think that that's the thing that I would be cautious about if I was a Roger Federer fan, thinking that this is the moment that he then rolls on and wins the Australian Open, because we've seen so many moments over the last 6 months in which he's tightened up or his game has gone awry and he started flailing away, in your words, bailed out a couple of times in matches, and I think that those are the right words. He looked tight, though. What I mean by that is the game looked tight. There were no loose errors from that forehand wing. Everything looked as though it was in place. The footwork was just right. And I like watching Zverev quite closely at the moment to see what's happening with his serve, because it really took me aback at the ATP finals the way he was just rolling through these service games, crashing down these serves as fast as anybody in the world with seemingly little effort. And for three or four games, he did that again at the start here, but he couldn't carry it on. And Federer, over the years, Federer was the first player ever to be able to deal with the serve of Andy Roddick. He was able to read it. He was able to diffuse it. And I just wonder whether he's maybe going to start working ways to diffuse and blunt the game as Zverev. It's going to be fascinating, really, going into...
Yeah, that's very interesting. Do you think he spent all, four or five weeks of the off-season just hatching a plan for blunting the Zverev serve?
I think it's certainly been in the back of his mind. He will have noticed, really, him and Djokovic, they'll have felt the force of Zverev in that ATP finals. And just have been, I think he will have come into their mind in the off-season, whereas he hasn't in the past. That when they're training, I reckon his game and his face will be in their minds a little bit.
Okay, so you say that it's the perfect tournament for Federer, etc., etc. We should take his form, albeit very good, with a tiny pinch of salt. But the fact is, he's looked extremely good in the Hopman Cup the last 2 years, and he's won the Australian Open the last 2 years. Mm.
Yeah, well, he was very, very convincing this week. He did not look a year older. He didn't look any older at all.
No.
I found that really interesting. And
sickening. Sickening. You say interesting, I say sickening.
It is a bit. I'm not sure how much to read into it, though, because we've had 6 months of him looking older. and looking, I don't know, it's just, it's impossible to know whether any of these factors play into contention in the Australian Open or not. But
well, except really... they have the last couple of years, I think.
Well, I
think he's got exactly what he's needed from the Hopman Cup. There's a reason he keeps going back there. I know for his comeback 2 years ago, the reason he chose Hopman Cup was slightly sentimental reasons. It's where he met his wife, Mirka. But also, you know, you're guaranteed the matches at the Hopman Cup. I wonder actually whether Andy Murray would have preferred to play the Hopman Cup this week. I believe the reason he played Brisbane was because to fulfil the pledge he had made last year was out of a loyalty and a sense of duty and honouring an agreement that had been in place a year ago. And he ended up pulling out after the draw was done, which I'm sure won't have sat easily with him. I'm sure he'd have preferred to play Hopman Cup where he would have been guaranteed matches. But yeah, the fact is, you say it's impossible to tell. Well, we do have 2 years worth of data on Federer playing Hopman Cup and Federer winning the Australian Open.
Yeah, so you're saying Federer is going to win the Australian Open then?
I'm saying he has moved up in my list of favourites, which I haven't quite settled on yet.
Okay, right. Well, Catherine's got a week.
But yeah,
to
it has changed my view of Federer at the Australian Open.
Yes.
What I've seen this week.
Yeah,
it has.
Well, I think I'd agree. I mean, I'd pretty much go along with that. What about Serena and Kerber? And also, we should mention Bencic. But what did you've said here? Kerber looking awesome, and this again is the same as we had a year ago, isn't it? Where she just comes out looking as though she's been living in some forest, chopping trees down for 2 months.
Yeah, she looks fantastic to me. I mean, we know what a hard worker she is. You're right. We expected to come off an off season and a pre season training block, looking like world's strongest woman. Really, she's extraordinary. Somehow she's got a tan already. How has she already got a tan?
Because it's hot.
And she looks hungry. She looks. I know she's not world number one in the way that, you know, she was a couple of years ago, but she looks comfortable in her skin. You know, she did a lot of sort of self-promotion, sounds really bad, but, you know, she's on the cover of German Vogue at the moment. And so a lot of promotion of her picking up German Sports Person of the Year award and looking, you know, very glamorous at the award ceremony and stuff, and lots of pictures taken. And she just looks so much more comfortable with it this time around, with the attention, with the status. I still don't think it's her, you know, through and through. I still don't think she's ever going to be a person that feels that, you know, she's at home on a red carpet or whatever. But I feel like she's learned to deal with it and learned to be more at ease with it. So that combined with the physicality and the tennis that she's playing, she's still got a funky technique. I'm sitting there marveling at how brilliantly she's playing and the athleticism and stuff. And then sometimes I sort of stop myself and remember, wow, what she's doing with what is basically a weird technique, isn't it? Particularly on that forehand, is pretty amazing. Weird technique and a slightly weak serve. She's amazing. I mean, physically, she looks just, I mean, even by Kerber standards, pretty amazing.
Is Serena Williams the favourite for the Australian Open based on what you've just seen over the last week?
Ooh, I don't think she stands ahead of any other. I think she's in a crop of favourites, but for me, she's not ahead of them. What do you think?
I think she
might... just watched Pliskova win Brisbane.
I think she's the favourite. I think she's the favourite.
Do you?
Yeah, and actually, I'm just looking at the odds here. According to the bookies, she's comfortably the favourite, which surprises
me.
Yeah,
but there's always this Serena and Federer, but there's always a bias for the established players.
There's also a fear, isn't there? I think the thing is, when you look at the odds, what's fascinating is just how many players are in the pack behind her that are all between sort of 8-1 and 16-1. There's loads of them, because I think that everybody knows there's lots of players that could win it, but actually she's the one who's won 20 plus of these titles, so she's the one they can trust. And I don't know, I do feel she's the favourite, but I'm not that confident to pick her myself. I'm not sure I will be picking her for the title yet. I haven't completely distilled that in my mind, because I think Naomi Osaka could just roll through a second consecutive Grand Slam title. I think Aryna Sabalenka, having won a title this week and given all she's done the last few months, could do the same. It's just, it's so intriguing, the women's draw. It's the better tournament in many ways in that regard. Wherever you look, something notable could be about to happen and somebody big could lose. Whereas I don't get that same. I think that you're more likely to be able to, you'd probably be able to predict more or less the semi-finalists of the Australian Open when the draw comes out on the men's side. Famous last words.
Yeah, Grigor Dimitrov in there, is he, David, for you?
Yeah. Well, Grigor Dimitrov being there. I think that's unlikely. Yeah. I did have a moment when he walked out on court in Brisbane, and he got a couple of wins, and he beat John Millman, which he struggled to do last year, but then he lost to Nishikori 7-5, 7-5. But he came out, and I thought, I'd read a couple of people saying how he was standing really close to the baseline and maybe the influence of Agassi and all this sort of stuff, and I thought, oh, maybe, you know. And I can't believe he's going to break through at a level higher than he's already achieved, which has been a perfectly good career, just not the career we anticipated it would be. So, no, I don't.
I switched that Nishikori match on at 5-5 in the second set, Dimitrov serving 40-30. And I thought, right, game on. Brilliant. Obviously lost the first set, but he's looking good. He's looking sharp. He's looking up for this. Two double faults on forced error, lost serve, lost the match one game later. So that is the sum total of Dimitrov tennis that I've watched this year. So, yeah, he's not in my last four.
There were some good bits, I can tell you that. But anyway, they weren't those bits.
Everyone has good bits. We have the occasional good bits.
No, we don't.
Anyway.
In Brisbane, elsewhere, Karolina Pliskova has just won the women's title. She was a set and a breakdown against Lesia Sorenka, who served for the match and didn't manage to serve it out. And Pliskova came back and won it. So well done to her. She might be a contender for the women's title. It's long overdue, really, isn't it? Daniil Medvedev against Kei Nishikori, as we come to you here on the Tennis Podcast, is just about to get underway, so we're probably not going to be able to fit that one in. But Medvedev just...
Hey, breaking... I've got breaking news, David. Oh, breaking news that will be out of date by the time you all listen to this.
Hey.
Courtney Nguyen, the WTA insider, has I've just seen a tweet from her, a quote from what I assume is one of the tournament organisers involved in the trophy presentation to Karolina Pliskova. Quote, tomorrow we have an announcement of an even bigger event for next year, as in to replace Brisbane, presumably.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they're going to be one of the ATP Cup sites. I imagine.
Yeah, but that doesn't cut. This is during the women's trophy presentation.
Oh, okay.
So that's not going to be included in the ATP Cup, is it?
I hope not. That'd be a bit awkward.
No, well, it'd be great. Hmm. Mixed event is what tennis needs.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it's going to be the new Hopman Cup site. Who knows? I don't know.
But there isn't a new Hopman Cup. Oh. What a mess.
I don't know, Catherine. Anyway, earlier on, so I said Medvedev against Nishikori is the men's final, and Medvedev was the man that beat Andy Murray in the second round. Murray got a win in the first round against James Duckworth. And he, you know, I don't know. What did you think? I thought he played decently. I mean, he still looks very awkward and uncomfortable just moving around, but he played okay. What did you think? I mean, the story was more the things he said rather than the way he played.
Yeah, I mean, I think you heard probably in the tone of our discussion about Andy Murray in last week's podcast that you and I and probably every tennis fan is desperately searching for reasons to be optimistic, but probably deep in the pit of our stomachs is not that optimistic about the comeback of Andy Murray. So, given that I went into that Duckworth match with low expectations, I was slightly pleasantly surprised. I found reasons for for an elevated level of optimism, should we say. Yes, he still walks like my grandpa in between points, but I didn't think he was holding back, you know, running out wide on the backhand side in the way that he had been sporadic times we've seen him in the last year. And I thought his serve was better. You know, I keep banging on about that time I watched him play Kyle Edmund in Eastbourne last year, and he was serving at about, you know, 80 miles per hour or something. It was horrendous. So I found reasons for optimism. And of course he had that emotional reaction when being asked on court about the time that he'd had away, what it had taken for him to get back here. We're now quite used to seeing that from Andy Murray. The emotional impact for me is not any lessened. I still find it quite harrowing, really, seeing him just be overwhelmed with the emotion of it all in the moment, you know, you know, just the slightest thought of what he's been through, what he's had to come face to face with, you know, his mortality as an athlete. And when you're defined by being an athlete, that's the mortality of your identity, of your soul, isn't it? So I was emotional and slightly optimistic after Duckworth, and then obviously that all the bubble burst a bit against Medvedev, because he was very, very resoundingly beaten against Medvedev. He still says he wasn't experiencing any pain in his hip during the match, and, you know, no cause for alarm, etc., etc. But there's no doubt that, you know, that was a sign of how far off he is. But now Medvedev has gone on to reach the final and potentially win the tournament. Does that put the loss in any different a light? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you could clutch at that straw, and I'm happy to. But I just don't know how much more he can improve, really, with his physicality. I'm sort of just hoping against all kind of logic, really, that he just starts playing matches, not feeling it, and looking like his old self. But I was watching that match against Duckworth the other day when my 8-year-old daughter walked in. And she said, "Oh, Daddy, who's playing?" I said, "Andy Murray." She said, "Oh, great. Why is he limping?" And I thought, yeah, okay, my little daughter, who doesn't watch much tennis, has seen him limping immediately. And that struck me that, you know, it's that obvious. I've almost got used to the way he walks. But then he actually talked about the way he walks after, I think, the second match of the two, and said, you know, he doesn't like seeing himself walk like that, and it almost hurts more when he's walking around. I mean, we've had a few correspondences on Twitter here. Lynn said, having watched Andy closely for years, there is a limp. The hip business is not going to go away. Although there is some encouragement in the way he's played so far, I can't see him coping with 5-set matches, and do think he will retire this year. Anna, now we've had this conversation before. Is it Anna Doble or Anna Doble? I can't remember. Anyway, she says...
It's Doble, but I like to think of it as Doble, because yeah. I think that's fun.
Oh yeah, we've renamed
her. And I think she doesn't mind me thinking of her as a Doble, like a Buble.
Yes. Okay, well, that's
I'm
what
sure
we're
his
with.
Non-stage name really is, you know, Booble.
Fine. Okay. Watched a replay of the match just now, and actually I'm less worried, she says. He served pretty well and just made too many unforced errors. Seemed like rustiness more than discomfort. Movement okay. He's always waddled to me. I reckon he can build on this and get some okay results this year. Siobhan
Is
Walsh...
Is that waddled, W-A-D-D-L-E-D?
Yes.
Right. Oh.
There you go. Siobhan Walsh says, finally, breaks my heart. I have watched him fight to get to number one. His own psyche, the greatest opponents in history, some sections of the media, and he beat them all. It breaks my heart that he may have to stop. He's a brilliant pundit, but all that fight wasn't so that he could talk about the sport. Oh, dear.
Yeah, I mean, fast forward 10 years, David. Andy Murray's retired, you know, long retired, probably very long retired. And we stick on YouTube and we watch a clip of, you know, one of his matches from Brisbane this week, or a recent match, and we see him walking the way he is, we'll go, oh my God, you know, obviously he was going to return, you know, obviously there was no hope. It strip away all of our feelings for Andy Murray, our desperate hopes, you know, and, you know, we become your 8-year-old daughter, you know, seeing it all with fresh eyes. And it's very difficult to do that because he brings out a lot of emotion in all of us for various different reasons. But strip all that back and we become your daughter, don't we? Seeing it with fresh eyes and going, oh my God, he's walking like my grandpa. And how on earth can that be, that person be a top level athlete in a sport where the difference between 1 in 100 in the world is fractions of a percent? You know, it is fractions of a percent. So he may be back to what, 90% of his former self, but that's eons away from where he needs and wants to be. I don't know. It's two matches. I do feel like Hotman Cut would have been better for him this week. And I'm sure, well, maybe he would say, but, you know, I suspect a sense of loyalty and commitment to Brisbane is why he ended up playing there.
Can I be granted
Didn't take a wild card into Sydney. I'm sure they would have offered him one.
I need one, however, Catherine, which is...
Go on.
A year ago, and for the following few months, I remember looking at Novak Djokovic a number of times and thinking, he just doesn't look like he used to look, and I don't see how he's ever going to look like he used to look again. If his elbow is hurting and he can't serve anymore and he's burnt out and it's all gone.
Yeah, but it was so much less physical with Djokovic. Yes, there was an element to it that was physical. The elbow was a problem, but first of all, it was a fixable problem rather than a chronic issue that. A chronic injury which you just have to manage. Again, they've both done this thing of not quite saying exactly what the injury was, right? But I believe that was a specific injury which he tried to manage and eventually realised that it would be better to give in and have surgery to correct it. Now it is corrected. Hooray. And he's back to being brilliant again. Andy Murray is managing a chronic injury. It's different. I mean, you're right. I'm not saying I don't take a grain of hope from it, but it is. It's a grain rather than a morsel.
Okay, I want a great big chunk. Oh well.
I know.
I can't have one of those.
I hope he doesn't listen to the podcast.
Ignore us, Andy. You're going to be fine. Don't worry. But anything can happen. Brian Baker has had his 14th surgery this week, but he's still hopeful. Good luck to Brian Baker in his recovery. He's had horrible problems with hip injuries and back problems, etc. Still trying to make a career.
Leighton Hewitt's had hip surgery, and he has just entered the Australian Open.
Correct.
Post-retirement.
Go on, Leighton. Fantastic. Now, what else has happened in Brisbane? Rafael Nadal withdrew. He's another... I mean, his injuries aren't as dramatic and singular as Andy Murray's hip, but he just has so many of them, doesn't he? So we watch and wait with bated breath to see whether he's going to be able to play the Australian Open. Del Potro's already pulled out. Naomi Osaka's press conference after defeat to Lesia Cyrenka really was just must listen, wasn't it? Because it was so candid. She was so open about, in her words, a sort of immaturity in her behaviour on court, and she let us in on just how she's trying to deal with being a Grand Slam champion who everybody's looking at and just assuming will win, and that she's supposed to win, were her words, I think. And I found it fascinating, A, that she's going through this and she's laying it bare for us all to know about. I mean, I think it's the sort of thing that we all assume happens to Grand Slam champions, particularly first-time winners. Over the last year or two, we've seen Kerber and Halep have those issues. But she's really letting us in there, isn't she? I mean, it just makes her all the more likeable, relatable. I mean, what a boon to the sport Naomi Osaka is.
Yeah, she's got an extraordinary capacity for self-awareness and self-reflection, which is always an endearing quality. You know, think about all the classic hilariously idiotic characters in comedy. The key ingredient to all of them is total lack of self-awareness. So the reverse of that sort of self-reflection is always appealing, especially coming from the mouth of someone who's so disarming in the way she speaks. She sounds like somebody that's just she catches me off guard, because she sounds like somebody that's just sort of speaking, not necessarily without thought, but kind of just shooting from the hip and saying whatever's on her mind. But actually there's an awful lot more going on there. There's an awful lot more depth of thought. And, you know, for her to say, I don't like watching myself, I think I behaved... did she use the word spoiled? Or have I translated that? It was a word kind of like... sulky. That's the word. She said, I felt like I was sulky. Sulking on the court, and I don't like watching myself when I get negative like that. And you know, she talked about the nerves that she experiences and how different they are. She said she feels the same level of nerves that she would have done before a match like this a year ago, but they're completely different nerves. You know, she said before it would have been nerves about the occasion, now it's nerves about the pressure she puts on herself to win. And you're right, we assume all that without hearing it ever from players. And usually, in fact, top players will deny it, because apparently any emotional or psychological chink is weakness. And I love that she's showing that it's not. She in the montage of that press conference after her loss to Serenko that I saw, the last thing she said was, I got so much more from this match than I would have done if I'd won it.
Wow.
I mean, it's extraordinary. What an extraordinary line. She's glad she didn't win it. She's a better player for not winning it. And well, I know that's a sort of cliche that we trot out as pundits.
But will it
But for
bear
her,
out?
In that moment, in the immediate aftermath of a loss, to come out with something as poised and self-reflective as that is amazing.
We don't know if it's true, though. We don't know if it'll bear out. I mean, that's how she feels at the moment. That's what she said. But it will. I'm not convinced. This episode has definitely put doubt in my mind about her for the immediate future of the Australian Open. I think she's going to have an amazing career, but I do think that this could all get a bit much for her in Melbourne. That's my feeling.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Let's go through a few of the other results of the week, because we've had some significant winners and results elsewhere. Djokovic had 2-3 setters against Martin Fucsovics and Tamura's Basilashvili. Have I said that right? I can't remember whether I've
you
got
have.
The name right.
Yeah, 2 out of 2.
Yeah, and then he eventually lost to Roberto Bautista Agut in 3 sets. Absolutely stunning match. Bautista Agut, I don't think we have ever seen him play better. And he ended up winning the title, beating a resurgent Thomas Burdick in the final. Nice to see him back and fully fit again. Brilliant from Bautista Agut. Does it make any difference to your view of whether Novak Djokovic will win the Australian Open?
Like an iota of difference. He's still the head and shoulders favourite.
A morsel.
And I think he's got the tennis he needs from this week. You know, the 2-3 setters, well, the 3-3 setters, you know, in fact, I think he's got more from it than if he had just had a procession to the title. So, yes, a morsel of doubt. Obviously, it's different over best of 5 sets, but it'll give, I mean, for the rest of the field, it should give them more than a morsel. They need to convince themselves that that's a significant loss, that he is beatable. They need to be clinging on to that loss to Bautista Agut. But for me, it makes a tiny difference. He's still head and shoulders favourite, isn't he?
John Wertheim interviewed Chris Evert on his podcast a few days ago, and he asked her whether she would take Novak Djokovic or the field, i.e. everybody else.
I love that question.
What do you think?
But basically, is he greater than 50% chance of, would you put his chances of winning it at greater than 50%, right?
Yeah, but I mean, Zverev, Federer, Wawrinka combined versus Djokovic. What do you think? Chris Evert said Djokovic.
Yeah, I probably think just Djokovic.
I'd probably think just the field. And actually 53%
just had
of
a little moment
of
thinking about
the field.
Just had a little moment of thinking about how well Federer played. That is... A week ago, I would have said for sure Djokovic. And I am just wavering a bit on that. But you wouldn't say that about Serena, would you? You're saying Serena's the favourite, but...
Oh, no.
Serena
a few years ago was where Djokovic is now, and even maybe more convincing. Yeah.
Foregone conclusion territory, you might say, David.
Yeah, let's be realistic. Yeah, I'd probably just go with the rest on balance, because he's got to run into so many players, but it's 50-50. It is right on the edge for me, maybe just towards the field. So Bautista got won the title. Mr. Reliable won Pune, Kevin Anderson. He beat Ivo Karlovic in the final. He didn't face a break point in the final. He didn't break serve in the final, 3 tie breaks. But it's just Kevin Anderson doing what he does, winning. He's a winning machine, this guy.
Where is he on your list of favourites?
Where is he on my list of favourites? That's a very good question. Oh, he'd probably be about...
Is he top 5?
About 4th, I would say.
Wow.
Somewhere like that.
Is he ahead of... I was going to say Cilic, but Cilic has got an injury.
He is my Marin
Cilic. Is he ahead of Zverev?
I would say.
Is he ahead of Zverev?
No.
I'd have him ahead of Zverev. Ooh.
No, I would still have Zverev ahead of
him.
He's
reached 2 Grand Slam finals. Zverev's reached 1 Grand Slam quarterfinal.
Yeah, but I think Zverev's top level is just higher. I think he's going to be a better player.
That's not what I'm asking. Is he going to be a better player in the next 2 weeks best of 5 sets?
I think he is, yeah. I would put him ahead of Anderson based on the fact that I think that Anderson's level will get him so far, and then he's slightly reliant on other people not reaching their very best level. It's quite interesting looking at the bookies here. I mean, crack, he's way down. He is way down. He's like 40
Yeah, because
to
he's
one.
Not. Yeah, well, the bookies are skewed towards, you know.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
Established glamour players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I'm closing down
my
bookies.
This is why you and I aren't odds compilers, David.
Right. I'm not looking at that anymore. I've closed them down. Bye bye, bookies.
What have the bookies got Andy Murray's Australian Open odds at? Amuse me.
Between 14 and 40 to 1 at the moment.
What would you put them at?
Oh, 100 to 1.
200 to 1?
Certainly 100 to 1.
You said 100, I said 200. Oh, God, let's go and cry. Where would you put Pliskova, David?
Pliskova?
In your women's, yeah. And who? So Pliskova's just won Brisbane. Sabalenka's just won Shenzhen.
Yeah, Sabalenka's an interesting one. I mean, I would put Sabalenka ahead of Pliskova, personally.
I would too.
I think Sabalenka could do an Osaka. She could win this.
Yeah.
She could win it.
And I don't think it would even be that much of a surprise. I feel, for me, that would be less out of the blue than Osaka winning US.
Probably yes, because we've seen more recent form from Sabalenka.
I mean, everybody is talking of her as a Grand Slam champion in waiting. And I'll say it again, she took Osaka to a third set tiebreak in New York. Could have been her.
What's it? I don't know.
Could
I don't
have
think
been
it was
her
a tie break.
Lifting
I think
that
it was a 6-4.
It was
something like that. But it was
a third set tie break. It was a third set tie break. She double faulted to give away. Yeah.
No. Okay. All right. I trust you.
I mean, I am double checking it now.
So am I. what was the other result? I've just been watching this morning. I've been reading up on Andreescu. Bianca Andreescu.
Oh, bollocks, David. It was 6-4 in the third.
Yes. Don't you argue with me. I should say, folks, this morning's agenda comes to you from Catherine late last night. She did a splendid job. However, you might have noticed, given we're scrabbling around for what the scorelines were about 6 months ago, that Grad Matt hasn't been able to help us today because he's been busy. And so, fortunately, that's why we're
hiring.
This
is what happens.
Yeah. That's why we want to hire him, give him a job. That's why we want to fund our Kickstarter so desperately. Obviously, we want it to help us keep the show going generally. But that's what he brings, folks. He brings an incredible level of detail.
How much, David, of Bianca Andreescu have you seen, defeated Auckland finalist?
Well, I saw a lot of her. I saw the final today. I've seen snippets throughout the week. This is a player, 18 years of age, from Canada, who qualified for this tournament, won 3 qualifying rounds, and then she beat Venus Williams, Caroline Wozniacki, and today she was beating Yulia Gerges. She was a setup. She was 5-4 up, with Gerges serving. But what a lovely player to watch she is. I mean, really, have you seen much of her yet?
Only snippets here and there. I've not seen a full match, but I agree.
Love this
stylish.
Honestly, at a time when we've just lost Agnieszka Radwańska from the game. Now, she's different to Radwańska. She's a much bigger hitter, but she likes to play drop shots. She's just got that intuitive ability to play different types of rallies that she plays on feel, uses instinct, makes it awkward for power. She'll match power players, and yet she's still got variety as well. I mean, there's a bit of Daria Kasatkina. Actually, the one that reminded me of her, she reminded me of most, was probably Belinda Bencic. That sort of instinctive ability to just play tennis rather than just being an athlete. And I found her really exciting to watch.
I love that comparison, because I've loved watching Belinda Bencic this year. I'm ready for her to rise back up to where I feel she belongs. Ash Barty also. I just want a quick mention of Ash Barty. She looks so fit and strong to me.
Exciting time.
And she's talking about
top 10.
Your
voice sounds better. It sounds like we've cured you of your allergy.
Does it? It's as Australian ears.
Yes. And no, Australia starts tomorrow for you, doesn't it, on the 24-hour flight. Any it tips you've does. Got at Tennis Podcast for what Grad Matt should do on a 24-hour flight, because he's never been on one, and he's got one this week.
Dave Levy's advice was so rubbish. Ignore it all.
What was it?
Don't drink. Was one of it.
I mean, alcohol.
I don't think I've ever... Yeah.
Do you have a tipple on a 24-hour flight?
I think it depends how nervous you feel about flying.
Right.
But I am strongly opposed to sober flying.
I tell you, we are going to have to do a combined Tennis Podcast flight to Australia one year and record an edition of the show. In fact, we could do a 24-hour Tennis Podcast marathon on the plane one year, just to see what sort of stages of drunkenness Catherine goes through.
No. You've never drunk, David. Always classy.
Right. Okay. Yes. Tipsy. Merry. All those things. All those little adjectives. Okay.
Indeed.
Catherine, well,
we've run out of time. Can we do 30 seconds of Britwatch?
Yes. Go on.
Well, Kyle Edmund lost to the world number 184 and is now pulled out of Sydney. 185. And is now pulled out of Sydney with a knee injury.
Yeah.
It's not good, is it? It's not good. Big time points to defend here.
And Joe Konta withdrew 1-4 down in Sydney qualifying this morning with a neck problem, as reported by Adam Mulder, our friend from BT Sport, who, I mean, that hasn't confirmed that particular injury. But, I mean, that sounds precautionary to me. If it is a neck injury, you know, she's maybe ricked her neck or something like that. But, oh, dear. We need some good British news here.
First time she's played qualies since 2015.
Mm. Oh, well. Edmund came out of nowhere last year.
We could be having a quiet old time at the Australian Open, David.
Catherine's injured. Unwell. It's all going wrong. Anyway, so that is about it from us, I think, Catherine. Unless I've forgotten anything else, you can go and finish your packing. Have you packed your racket?
Oh, I haven't. Was I supposed to?
Yes.
I haven't got my racket. My brother's got my racket.
Borrow a racket.
I think we can borrow. I can borrow a tennis racket. Yeah.
Okay, right. So, I mean, I've been waiting for 5 years for this rematch.
Mm.
My form's decent.
No one's chipped in to umpire it, though.
No.
So
funny that.
Can't happen.
Nobody's going to waste their money.
Do you think we've overestimated the value of umpiring?
But anyway, you can umpire our
To be
rematch.
Clear, I campaigned for setting the price for that high because I don't want that rematch to happen.
Yes, because you want to retire with a 1-0.
Market forces, innit?
She's got the head-to-head, folks. She doesn't want the rematch.
Yeah.
So anyway, yes, you can still do that. You can take us on to the predictions. You could give the gift of the Tennis Podcast. We'll say happy birthday to whoever it is you want on the show. If you support us in that way, they get a signed, bespoke, designed Tennis Podcast card. There are all sorts of other things you could do. You can introduce a show. And, basically, the gist of it, we've just come up with a few reasons that you might want to help this show keep going and growing. The other thing we'd like you to do as well, if you wouldn't mind, tell somebody you know about the show. If you like it, if you enjoy listening to this, if you know somebody who likes tennis or you think might want to listen, tell them about it, because then we'll have a bigger listenership and we can keep it going and growing. That's what we're trying to do. Catherine, have a safe trip to Australia. Grad Matt, you too. We'll speak to you in a couple of days. Make sure you're getting your agenda sorted, because this one's been rubbish. Sorry, Catherine. We got all sorts of stuff wrong, but we're still enjoying it. And we will be back with another Tennis Podcast brought to you in association with The Telegraph on Friday, straight after the draw has been made the night before. And we'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.